and good evening. Welcome to Reflections in the Dark here on Firefall Talk Radio. I'm Richard Grund, broadcasting live. Spreaker.com, the only place you can hear us live. If you want to listen to us archived, come here. Go to Blog Talk Radio's old website for Firefall Talk Radio. You can also find us on iTunes as well. Ephesians 5:11 says, "Take no part in the worthless deeds of evil and darkness. Instead, expose them." Well, consider them exposed. SRT, the Supernatural Response Team, has been confronting and exposing the darkness since July 2007, and Reflections in the Dark has been its voice since May 2010. Wednesday night, 7 p.m., we do a Bible study called The Porch. Sometimes the two tie together. They will again this week. If you want to support Firefall, The Porch, or SRT, go to supernaturalresponse.net or firefalltalkradio.com, and you will find a way to either do a one-time donation or monthly support. SRT has a Facebook page, facebook.com/supernaturalresponseteam. We're also on Twitter, SRT612, also at Firefall Talk, and on Instagram at Supernatural Response. I apologize for not being able to broadcast from Atchison like we planned. Both the internet and even the mobile LTE connection was difficult at best. Even some of the videos I was able to get up to on Facebook and Instagram took forever. So I apologize for that. We did whatever we could, and Atchison's a strange place. Finally, if you still want to support the Deep Darkness, you can. Unfortunately, we did not receive all the funding that was expected, and we did the best we could with what we had, and we know God will get the glory for it. But now we begin the post-production and promotional process, so it's not over. If you still want to support us and you're interested in participating in this groundbreaking project, go to thedeepdarkness.com and contact us. Let's see if I was able to get Joe on the air. It doesn't. Let's get him back. Let's see if we can get him back. Hold on, let me get you on the air here, brother. Are you on the air? Say hello, Joe.
I am on the air. Hello.
There you are. I see you.
Awesome. Good.
So here we are once again. A week ago at this time, we were sitting in the Sally House. You know, we flew in from Kansas on Friday, and boy, our arms tired. But anyway,
ba-da-boom.
All right. How you doing, man?
I am doing good, and, you know, I was looking forward to doing the show anyway, and I wasn't sure because I know that some of us were catching up on sleep and doing things, and, you know, I'm glad we definitely have the show tonight for our listening audience to kind of take them through some of the stuff, but you're right. I mean, what hit me today was a week ago, we were getting ready to go into the Sally House, you know, earlier, and I remember getting the key at 3:30, and looking at the time now, we would technically be in the Sally House, and it's just been such a blur. Like, everything went by so fast that it's hard to believe we accomplished all we accomplished in that time, and now we're like, you know, 3 days back and getting acclimated to life again outside of doing SRT stuff. So it's a little depressing. It's a little adjusting, getting back to reality and life. You know, I mean, for me being on the road and doing the stuff that we were doing and being a part of all it is definitely something that, you know, I'd love to do all the time. And, you know, you get accustomed to it, obviously, being on the road, but yeah, it's surreal, and I'm a little bummed that it's over.
Yeah, you have to go through a decompressing. I guess it's what soldiers go through after they've been on a mission and come back, and you come back to reality, come back to the real world. And for 6 days, we were living in a surreal world, a paranormal, supernatural world. We live in it all the time, but this was different. And for me, all the preparation, all the months, the lack of sleep, caught up. Excuse me, I'm getting choked up. Caught up with me. I've done a lot of sleeping over the last couple of days, and sometimes I feel like I'm moving in slow motion. My body's coming back, but yeah, there is a downside where you say, you know, I wish I could do this all the time. The truth is, I'm not sure physically, you know, you could do it all the time, but it would be nice to have the ability for periods of time to go on the road and do this kind of stuff and do all that. And if that's what the Lord wants, that's what will happen. But you come back to the reality of homes and families and pets. And in our case, the electronic harassment has begun. Our brand new dryer, it's only like a month or two old, went out. So you come back to all of that, looking and waiting for the retaliation, which you know is going to come. And what's even harder is to watch what's going on in the world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you always know that there's some sort of retaliation. And it's always been like that with us anyway. So it's not like it's something we're not used to. It is a way of life, especially when you may not be doing the stuff, you know, like, say, being on the road and doing the extensive cases. And you're right. I don't know if physically we could do it because of the type of state that it does put us in physically when you're around the supernatural, when you're around a lot of that energy and those electromagnetic fields. It does take a toll on your body in a different way. It's not the physical exhaustion of, saying, being a musician on the road, but it's a different type of an exhaustion that takes, you know, where you rely mostly on your spirit as opposed to your physical flesh. And, you know, those are the things that make it rough. But for me too, and I'm sure we'll get to this later, it wasn't only just doing the mission itself and being part of it. It was doing the documentary and talking to some of the people and hearing in their voices. And, you know, you tend to kind of put what you do, you know, you shelve that aside. And you just look at these people and you're like, you know what? This is exactly why we do Reflections in the Dark and exactly why we do these type of cases. Because it is about helping people. You know, it's not so much about doing the quote-unquote paranormal research. It really is about changing lives and giving them a different take of how, you know, maybe they thought their supernatural walk, you know, was, or maybe it lacked. You know, it was good to be a part of all those other little things that I didn't think would be so essential until I was there to realize, hey, you know what? That is the greater purpose. Being in the forefront and going out there and doing the work, helping people, is an entirely different feel than it is to actually do a case and be inside of a home and, you know, conduct an investigation.
Yeah, there was a lot to it, and we could get ahead of ourselves, but it kind of, you know, part of the tiredness too isn't just the paranormal, and we'll get to this, but the presence of the angelic and the Lord was as powerful as our very first mission, and then praying with people. But speaking of people needing prayer, Texas is getting pounded. And it's just interesting to me that days after this eclipse, this massive Hurricane Harvey made landfall Friday night as a Category 4 hurricane, flattening mobile homes, tearing roofs off of buildings, leaving more than 300,000 homes and businesses without power. It has weakened to a tropical depression as of today, but it came in with winds topping 130 miles an hour. It's the first Category 4 storm to make landfall in the United States since Hurricane Charley, which I lived through, hit Florida in 2004, and the first to hit Texas since Hurricane Carla in 1961. And if you've never been in the middle of a storm like that, I got to tell you, it's a I don't want to say unique experience, but you never forget the darkness and the sounds and then the stillness when the eye goes over the top of you and watching things get ripped out of the ground or bent. We had a basketball pole that I had put in really deep and put a giant bucket full of cement. I mean, this thing was immovable, and it just bent it in half. And so these people are going through it. At least three people are dead, many more injured. and battering Corpus Christi in Houston. Houston's completely underwater at this point. The Harris County Medical Examiner has confirmed one of the people that died was a woman who got stuck in her vehicle and tried to get out and got swept away. They found her 30 yards from her vehicle. She was pronounced dead at the scene. So there are families and people that have lost loved ones. They've lost their homes. Some lost their pets. Some people that I'm glad the sheriff's going to arrest them just abandon their pets. There's videos of boats coming up on pets that have been tied to a porch or a pole and left behind. And I'm glad that the sheriff's department is going to deal with that. But the head of FEMA said Hurricane Harvey is a landmark event and will affect this area for years to come. Nearly 50,000 people are involved in search and rescue to restore the mission, power and rescue mission. Another picture that bothered me was in a nursing home where the elderly were sitting in their wheelchairs waist deep in water. They had to be rescued. And they're saying that the area will get up to 50 inches of rain.
I have never been in a hurricane that was severe. I remember, you know, when I was younger, there was a couple of those hurricanes like Hurricane Gloria, Hugo, I believe it was, back in the day. I think it was like early 90s. And, you know, they would talk about winds, you know, about 130, 140. And, of course, you know, when it's that calm before the storm and then it happens, I remember being outside and as it was starting to get windy and the winds were picking up, I had one of those Nerf footballs. And I remember throwing it into the wind and then it just took it and the football went flying like total opposite way in a matter of like seconds. And then I remember going into the house and you had to tape up, you know, the doors and the windows. And I remember having the sliding glass window, how the wind was coming in and it was kind of bowing. It was bending a bit. But what was amazing to me, you know, that hurricane wasn't that severe because I think it didn't top off to more than 80 mile an hour winds. And it was doing that. So I can only have imagined what it would have been like to say 130 mile an hour, 125 mile an hour winds, how much more severe it was. Now, my sister was, I believe, when you had what, Charlie? She was living in Florida at the time, and her place got wiped out, and then she had to move back to Rhode Island. And I remember FEMA cutting her a check for like $5,000 or something like that. It was like maybe not even a week after she was back in the house, they cut her a check because I guess her whole place got destroyed. And, you know, not being in that hurricane, it's hard to imagine. But then you take it to, like, say now, after the eclipse, and you take, you know, the damage that Harvey has done, and you look at some of the videos and the footage, and it's shocking and it's sad. And of course, I feel really bad about, you know, them being in that situation, but I couldn't help but think after the eclipse and everything that we had gone through, how there's this weird supernatural type of atmosphere that's going on that I don't know if everybody can understand or feel it, but I definitely feel something has changed and shifted so much that it's like I'm heightened. Everything is heightened right now. And it could be because I'm coming off the case and, you know, trying to get my frequencies all back to normal. But I look at the hurricane, you know, and the eclipse, and I just see the broader picture here. And what scares me is who knows what's coming next, you know, for the remainder of 2017, never mind what we can expect in 2018 globally.
Yeah, I expected a natural disaster. I thought it was going to be an earthquake, but I do understand. There's a guy on the internet on YouTube called Dutch Sense, and I've listened to him, and he's been saying there have been earthquakes that are happening that are noticeable that the USGS is not reporting. It's like they don't want people to panic. And the earth is rumbling, and the plates are shifting, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This eclipse was a warning to America, and we'll see what happened. But if you missed Solar Eclipse 2017 last Monday, you're in luck, if it is luck. On April 8th, 2024, another one will come through 7 years from now in the opposite direction. But the next full coast-to-coast eclipse won't happen until 2045. Well, we were there. We were in Edson. We were in an area of totality. But we were covered with storms. If you saw the post that I was able to get up online, we got pounded. Some really serious storms shook the area that we were in. And unfortunately, on the solar eclipse day, it was all clouds. We didn't get to see the actual eclipse, but we saw the effects of it. When totality hit the area, I have a video of it. I'm trying to shorten it before I put it up online. But it was a bizarre feeling. Just watching, oh, it's getting a little cloudy, the sun's dimming, and then all of a sudden, it's just dark. It's nighttime. And hearing the birds go crazy, and the dogs barking, and the weird feeling that you got while it was happening. Apparently at the Nashville Zoo, the animals reacted to it. Giraffes and rhinos started running around crazily until the sun came back out. It was just a very weird feeling, and then suddenly it was gone. But you knew something took place, something unseen. You could just feel it. And all across the United States, people felt it. NASA says 4.4 million people were watching it live. And, you know, Acheson didn't get the numbers they were expecting. I'm sure they were saddened by that from a financial standpoint. But I estimate, from what I was told, there were 6,500 people out at the Amelia Earhart Airport. They were only prepared for 5,000. And considering how the hotels were packed out, unless people suddenly packed up and left and went to someplace else where you could see it, I think their big number was probably about 10,000. But that's just a guesstimate on my part. We were pretty isolated. We were busy. We were there for a purpose. We stayed in a really nice house that had its own activity. But we really didn't get to experience the eclipse or the town in that regard. Were you inside or outside when totality hit?
So I was outside. And like you said, everything happened so fast. We were all doing different things. And you know, but I remember making sure I was outside. And what was crazy for me, because I had never been in that situation, you know, to have it right there. I managed to videotape, record it getting dark. And I think it was like a minute and 36 seconds that I recorded. And you can see where it was kind of cloudy anyway. The gray skies there was a little cloudy. And then it got dark and dark. And then the streetlights come on. And then it's totally pitch black.
Yeah, it was black.
And then within a minute after that, it was starting to get light again. And I'm like, wow. And, you know, it was fascinating to be part of that and see that right there. But I had so many things going in through my mind at that point, because once again, I'm in a different mode. And I keep saying, you know, I feel this overwhelming supernatural event taking place. And that's how I looked at it. And it gave me just a quick peek and also a reminder of, you know, when those days come, I could picture it just getting dark. And not only the sky is getting dark and the, you know, without the sun, but what happens in that darkness. And then when we deal with the fallen, I mean, all those things were going simultaneously through my mind in like, you know, that split second. It was like, it was pretty amazing and yet scary at the same time.
I remember I was across the street and I was trying to film the whole thing before, you know, middle and after. And when it happened, when it went totally dark, I just felt this chill run through my body. And I started to think about all the teachings, everything I said, I thought about on the day of the crucifixion at that moment, those people were standing on Calvary. And as the Lord said, it is finished, and gave up his last breath, and you had the earthquake, and you had the solar eclipse, and everybody's watching this, and they're feeling the magnitude of the moment. And then I was trying to continue filming it, and I turned back towards the Sally house, and I couldn't even see it. It was so dark, and I was like only 20 feet away. I had to start walking towards the house to get some idea of where it was. It was just a strange, strange feeling. And, you know, as we did this, I knew that at the moment the sun went down, as the moment the eclipse began at 9:18 a.m. in Portland, Oregon, the sun was setting in Israel. And it was becoming the first month of Elul, a time of repentance, the 40-day period called Teshuvah, meaning to repent, to turn, a time to turn towards God. And a time of self-assessment, inward reflection, which is kind of what we were doing on the mission anyway. And time, you know, to change our ways, and leading up to, you know, the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, that for us, a lot of it as believers doesn't apply, but the spiritual aspect does. We've been atoned for. But I read this, and I want to share it. And this, while this is not a Bible study, what we do is biblical and is supernatural. Elul is the month where the Jews celebrate the king is in the field. It's tied to Song of Songs, chapter 6, verses 2 and 3. My beloved has gone down to his garden, to the bed of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather the lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He who pastures his flock among the lilies. And you look at the significance of the sheep, of the shepherd, of the harvest, of everything we believe that this thing has triggered. And as I mentioned in the teaching in Alabama, the Jewish rabbis teach that the moon represents Israel, and the Hebrew calendar follows the cycle of the moon. And the sun represents the Gentile nation, and the Gentiles follow the cycle of the sun. So in a solar eclipse, the nation, listen to me, folks, in the case of a solar eclipse, the nation experiencing the phenomenon is the nation under consideration by God. Huh. Let me say that again. The nation that experiences it, and the only nation that experienced this solar eclipse from coast to coast, starting in the 33rd state, ending on the 33rd parallel, is the United States of America. We are under consideration. It's God's way of saying, consider your ways. And there we are in the midst of what we're doing, the Sally House, the mission, the documentary, and all of that's rolling through me. And I know that even though I can't see that eclipse and the corona and the pictures that we were trying to get, that it was blocked by clouds. It was unseen, but it wasn't undone. And clouds represent trouble. Clouds can represent people. And we can be blocked out by all of this. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Exactly. And that's and those are the things that were going through my head throughout, you know, the whole time. As fascinating as it was to witness some of these things, and amazing and scary, and, you know, I mean, obviously it was such an emotional thing, and I'm sure in a little bit we'll probably talk about, you know, some of those things. But, you know, I mean, listening to you talking, I just, when I see the state that we're in right now and what's happening, what I always find confusing and mind-boggling is, as this is going on, and you know, we take ear to what's happening politically and throughout the world, religiously, in all the facets that we cover here, I still find it hard to believe that the world outside of all that, the media, you know, the sports, the entertainment, is still going on like it's no big deal. And I just wonder if any of them stop to realize that things aren't right? Or are they so vain and so wrapped up in their lives that they don't see it coming? I guess I answered my own question kind of talking to you about this, because at the end of the day, there are going to be people that are going to be, you know, caught, you know, and not preparing for anything. But do you think that America is in a state where at least a good percentage is starting to look at this as, you know, there's something bigger here, there's a bigger picture going on? Or do you think that it's still that small percentage that cares?
I think it's bigger than we would expect. I personally believe, as I've watched social media and people fight back against the mainstream media machine, a lot more people see what's going on than they want you to think. My opinion of the mainstream media remains the same. They are the mouthpiece of the fallen. Their role in all of this is to dumb down the people so that when it all falls apart, that they won't be prepared. But social media has combated that, which is why sooner or later they're going to have to take that away. People are getting it. They see that something's wrong. They don't believe the shill or the ad campaign of what's going on. Yes, we got craziness going on in the streets, but then when you figure out these protesters are paid to do it by the Wizard of Oz behind the screen who's paying all their bills, you understand that there's an agenda. But we, you know, we doing what we do, not just the show, not just the Bible study, but SRT, and then living the lives we live. And because of the life the Lord's given me, I tend to live in that world a lot more than most. You're right. Something changed. There is a seriousness. I can feel it. And Atchison was different. And, you know, let's get into it so you can understand what we're talking about. What we wanted or what we thought would happen didn't. But that's the one thing about doing what we do. It's not about what we want. It's about what the Lord wants. We serve the captain of the host. We are at his command and at his behest. And it doesn't always happen the way you think, but it always happens the way he wants. And it still happened. What we thought would happen did happen in a much more dramatic way that I'm hoping the documentary will show. But we experienced a lot of, I'll just call it biblical stuff. Scripture was being lived out in front of us. I mean, we went into that house on, first of all, we got into town on Friday. And four of us got there first, and the other two came later. And we got into the house we were renting. We couldn't get a hotel room, so we were all in this really nice rental house. And we were within that house for a short period of time when we heard the big slam upstairs, and we realized that there was something in the house. And I look back in it now, Joe, and I realize I set the tone for the entire week at that moment. I just simply walked to the stairs, looked upstairs to where whatever it was, and I simply said, "You do another thing. You act out again, and I'm going to petition my father to put you in the pit." And outside of a little poltergeist activity of things being taken, nothing happened. Then we went upstairs and we found where we think it was, and we walked into a walk-in closet, and there was a chunk taken out of the wall, and there was nothing nearby to do it. So we were right off from the get-go into paranormal activity.
Yeah, right off the bat, I mean, we were just, you know, like you said, I mean, we hear that bang when we got to the house. And you're right. I started to believe and realize, should I say, as we were getting closer to going to the Sally house, that it was to kind of set that tone and show where your authority is. And I think what happens with a lot of people that go into these houses, you know, on an investigative point of view, not from the angle that we're coming in, but from an investigative point of view, I think the first thing that people want to do is they want to show that they're not a threat. By showing that they're not a threat and being a little bit nicer, then they think maybe the spirits will show respect back. And they could almost, in essence, work together. You give me my evidence, and I'll leave you alone, and we can go our separate ways. That's how I see it all. It's almost like they're so blind in the way they handle these cases and going on them. I really believe that's how they set their own tone. So therefore, of course, what happens is the spirits take over that, and you know they know exactly what they're doing and how to get that person. What we did is we just took that stand right off the bat and says, no, this is the way it is. We put you in check. And you know, I mean, and the rest was history. But, you know, as I'm just, you know, when I think about how we set that tone, I would have never expected the things to go down the way they did. And I'm still shocked. To have been in the house. But go ahead, take us now into the Sally house. So
handle that situation. The other guys show up. We pretty much just hang out and we fellowship and, you know, we pray and we get to know one another because we had two new people to replace two other people that weren't there. And the interesting thing about that, one of the visions for SRT always was that to be able to plug people in as you need them in various places. So we kind of did that. And some, you know, it works and then it doesn't work because you have two people that are new. They kind of feel like they're outsiders because, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years and Jesse for almost 3 years. And it's difficult and it's awkward. But the first thing that struck me, and we'll just go through this piece by piece, is everything was different. This wasn't what we thought. This wasn't even the way we did McCullough, because we went into McCullough with the attitude of obtaining evidence, which we did and we always do. But we went into this haunted town and this haunted house. And excuse me, folks, for saying it this way. But we went into this town and this house kicking spiritual butt and taking names. We weren't there to be their friends. And, you know, when you were describing the typical paranormal approach, and if anybody out there is a paranormal researcher or a team person, forgive me if I offend you, but do you realize how stupid that sounds? Hey, let's go out into the woods. Let's feed the bears and the mountain lions. Let's let them know we're their friends. We're not here to hurt them, but we're going to feed them and take their picture. Come on. Just give me a break. So, you know, Saturday we began the interviews, which was really cool. And then, you know, with the Pickmans who used to live in the house came over and turned into a 3-hour tremendous interview, hearing information that has never been heard before. And I'm sitting there thinking, how am I going to fit all of this into the rest of the story? And then Sunday, we took the tour of the town with Denise, who had been on the show, and we went into the Sally house, and the tour was interesting, and we saw how everything worked out. We got into a couple of people's homes, and then we settled in for the night. And again, without realizing what we were doing, the tone was, we're not going to get scratched. We're not going to get pushed. Matter of fact, all the demons in this house are going to sit down, shut up, and they're not going to move. And you're not going to do anything until you're told to. And if there are human spirits, which we believe that there were, here's your opportunity to rat them out. Here's your opportunity to say whatever needs to be said, because when it's all over, you're all going. And we all got the same impression when we went down into the basement, which many believe is a vortex or a portal or whatever, that's where the strong man of the house was. And after I bound him and told him, you will sit down, you will shut up, you won't say or do a thing, the visual I got in my head was a crackhead, PCP high criminal in the back of a police car with his arms in shackles, you know, there's plastic restraints, trying to get out. He was enraged, and I think everybody else felt a sense of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, knowing the history on the Sally House, and, you know, from the Pickmans on, all the people that have gone in there countless times have been attacked, whether they were pushed, scratched, punched, burned, bruised, you name it. I mean, it is really, I'd probably even go as far as saying 75 to 80% of those who go into the house have something happen. Whether it's, you know, just a small, so it doesn't always have to be severe as far as on a physical level, but there's always some sort of activity happening. And I'm not sure if anybody really goes in there and says, hey, this is the way it is. You stay silent. You be quiet. I mean, I don't know if anybody's taken that approach because maybe, you know, out of fear that they didn't want to do anything like that. Like I said, in some people in the paranormal world, they will act a certain way out of respect to whatever they're dealing with, hoping that, you know, you can almost coexist together for that short period of time and expect nothing to happen. It doesn't work that way either. So I was expecting so many things to happen, and I think everybody else was too. You look at everybody's faces and you know, you'd ask them and say, what did you think? What did you think? And they'll all conclude to the same thing. What I envisioned in my mind was going to happen did not happen the way we thought it would, and it's almost shocking.
Yeah, and hopefully this documentary will capture, not hopefully, it will, because it's a matter of editing it properly to show. We went into one of the most haunted houses in what's considered to be the most haunted city in Kansas. You go on the internet, you see the movies, you see the TV shows, and shut it down. I mean, we didn't just shut it down. It went completely docile. I mean, we settled in for the night, and we spent more time that first night praising God, praying, singing praise and worship music, and taking a nap. I mean, who would have thought to fly all that way to be sitting that first night thinking we're going to get all of this powerful, dramatic evidence, and finding out that the strong man was bound. And scriptures kept coming to mind. You know, Matthew 12:29, how can someone enter a strong man's house and steal his possessions unless he first binds the strong man and then robs his house? We did that. We bound the strong man of that house to rob it. We robbed it of its authority. We robbed it of its respect. We robbed it of its reputation. And that was just the first night. And then we get up the next morning getting ready for the solar eclipse. The cameraman Greg and I are up before dawn to get the sun coming up and to find the right spot for the eclipse. And then there's no eclipse. The clouds are over, you know, block all that out. No crowds. There was no need for security. Now I know why the Lord kept it from happening. It would have been a major expense for nothing. There were no crowds. Well, we got a couple of people that showed up and wanted to know what we were doing and thought it was so cool. I do understand at some point somebody did try to knock on the door and wanted to come in. But for the most part, even that didn't happen.
No, that's the mind blower of it all. You expected, like, listen, here's what we expected. Huge crowds, sunny day, you know, 20, 30,000 people, or however we were thinking in our mind, you know, chaotic, you know, lots of activity.
It's what the chamber was expecting. It's what they told our tour person. It's what they were expecting.
Absolutely. And of course, then you take the Sally House itself and you're saying, wow, put all those people, put the Eclipse into the equation, mixed in with the Sally House, and you are expecting that it is going to be absolute pandemonium in every aspect of that town. And yet, there was such a peace and quietness where we were. And it was almost like being in the midst of like you had said it, it was like we're in the most chaotic situation of being in the house, but yet we were the most peaceful and at our safest in the house. It's still mind-boggling to me.
The most peaceful place to be at that moment, especially when that storm came over and they were talking flash floods and all the things. The most peaceful place to be was inside the Sally House. We had turned it from its cauldron of evil and demonic activity into the peace in the storm. I mean, I don't know if our listeners are getting it. We were getting it. We were living out scripture, and then this storm comes, and I posted the pictures on Instagram. Started out as these little storms that came together in this big storm. I mean, just immediately merged and was getting ready to come over the top of Atchison. They were talking flash flood. They were worried. People were sending us messages, be careful, the basement floods, all this other stuff. And we just prayed. We prayed, and then we watched the storm split on the radar, like someone had put a barrier right over the top of Atchison. So this massive storm split in half and went past us. And we were standing outside in the front of the house watching what I've seen before. I've seen real storms, and I've seen storms where I knew in my spirit that there was a war going on in the heavenlies. Storms where the clouds are rumbling and the lightning is within the cloud itself. It just looks different and it feels different. I experienced it all the time in Tallahassee. And I knew it was happening. I could just feel that there was a war going on up there. And I had been warned in the spirit by the Lord that, you know, we've been dealing with Baal-berith, and we went to McCullough, and he brought somebody bigger, and they both lost. And coming to Atchison, they were bringing their biggest brother that they could. And I'm pretty sure I know who it was, but that's not important. But if that entity had showed up and been unchecked, we would have been in a battle for our lives, because I've dealt with it once before, and it almost killed me. And before we came to Atchison, and Joe can tell you, I was outside with the guys, and I became very emotional. Matter of fact, I was pretty much sobbing uncontrollably, because there's an angel that has been comes around every now and then. And I didn't know if he was going to show up to McCullough. And I had asked him, I said, hey, it'd be really nice if I knew you were there. And to say he's big would be an understatement. He's as big as they come. And no, he's not Michael, so don't even go there. Michael's guarding Israel. And when that battle was going on, when we were watching it, standing, and we were getting wet because it was coming down, I heard the angel's voice say to me, I'm here. I'm about to do it again. And I just began to sob uncontrollably. I knew it was over right then and there. That whatever they brought in, the big guns, were getting their scaly little butts kicked up there. And then we went back inside for what we call the assault, to confront. And there was nothing left to confront. Everything had fled.
Absolutely. I mean, it was exactly like that. There was nothing. I mean, the bottom line of the whole story is what happened at the Sally House. And I can say on a physical level, or what we expected to experience, nothing happened. It was a very peaceful experience. Had we known the outcome, I'm sure we wouldn't have stayed there that long. We could have done the whole thing in 24 hours. It was that easy. And it really was. And then I was thinking, you got to picture this. Imagine all the angels that were there on top of the angel that you were talking about. So imagine behind the scenes what was really taking place. If we could only have gotten a glimpse to see that taking place. I mean, we felt it. Obviously, everybody had an emotional moment, and we were all hit emotionally at the same time. And that has to show for something as well in the documentary, for us to feel that emotion, really says a lot. Actually, the very fact of not having things happen in the house like we expected to says a lot of what was really going on behind the scenes, and it would be pretty amazing. And like you said, to pull it off is to be able to take what you have and position everything to tell that story as accurate as we can, because I don't think I would want to have all the viewers miss those certain things that we felt. It's we have plenty of content. The documentary is plenty of content. There's plenty of evidence to verify between the interviews and all that stuff. But can we capture truly how we were feeling during our time and stay from, say, the eclipse and on in the Sally House? And I think that's going to be the tricky part.
You know, and it's not that we didn't have evidence. Here's the other side of the equation. We do have orbs. We do have a shadow person. We do have a lot of substantial things. And as we go through the evidence, we tend to collect evidence almost accidentally. But here's the other kicker. Everything we saw and experienced was outside looking in. Nothing wanted to be in that house at that moment, not even in the backyard, not in the front yard, not down in the basement, not upstairs. We got visuals that we recognized, but they all kept their distance. And if there's anything that comes out of this, it should be an encouragement to those that believe that when Ephesians 4:8 says, when he ascended on high, he took captivity captive. And then Colossians 2:15 says, having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them. We lived it the whole time we were there, not just in the house, but everywhere we went. The people that we interviewed became nonstop opportunities for me to pray with people. They would ask, they would say something that would trigger me saying, can I pray for you? And them saying yes. One woman who was sick, another woman who was heartbroken over the loss of a friend in a plane crash there. Just on and on. Just, you know what this was? This was Woodbury. This was First Mission for SRT, where it was over before it began. The praise and the worship, the aerial support and the angelic support, just walked in there, did what we were told to do, shut it down, kicked it out, and we were done. I mean, that's really what it was. If 2017's theme was get back to basics, that's what the Sally House in Atchison was. It was getting back to basics. Not here to be your friend. I'm not here to help you. I'm not here to promote you. I'm here to confront you in the name above all names, and you have been defeated already, and I'm here to enforce it. That was our attitude.
And that was it. That was the attitude. You know, we started off the year getting back to basics. Absolutely. I mean, that is what we wanted, to set that tone for 2017. Then we had the opportunity to go to the Sally House and you follow everything that was going on throughout the year of what we were doing. And then, of course, gearing up to do this case, it was over. It was over before we even got there. You know, that's how I'm really feeling. It's like when we knew when we were all flying there and we met, there was a certain type of confidence. There was just a I don't think I ever worried. Once we arrived, and especially after that first night, I didn't worry anymore. I just felt everything was entirely different. The whole atmosphere was changed. And, you know, I can only, the only way I can think of it is like a football game. Like that's how I look at it, or a playoff game, you know, where you've got the team that should win the game. And then you have the little Cinderella team that probably earned their way to get to the wild card, or, you know, or advance to the wild card. And everybody's saying, this is going to be a great game. This is going to be nothing what people say. I mean, this is going to be close. It's going to go down to the wire. They're going to hang tough. But the truth of the matter is that team ends up coming out off the gate and getting their butts kicked. And it just ends that way, you know, 41-7 or something crazy like that. And that's how I look at this. This was something we expected that could really potentially go the way of being a tough battle, a grudge match all the way to the end. You know, hours of going back and forth and doing what we needed to do. But I feel like we were that team that we came in favorites and we won like favorites. That's how I look at this whole thing, is it was over before we took the field, you know, and that says a lot for me. So what would people, you know, I was always thinking, okay, what happens if we get all this evidence, which is a big battle, and then we go our ways? We could say, okay, did we cleanse the house? Did we do what we need to do? Did we shut it down? You know, after getting all that evidence? Sure. Would people think that? Probably not. They'll be like, well, you're just another group that goes in there. You have a lot of stuff happening. You say your prayers, you do your thing, and you leave, but you have no evidence to show any signs of being victorious. And that's how most teams are in there. You don't have the evidence of doing that. You just have your word saying, well, I believe we shut this down, and that was it. But in this case, we didn't have to take it that far, because the evidence was in the silence. The evidence was the very fact that a house that is 80% 80% chance of showing activity to just average people that go in that house, 9 times out of 10, something's going to happen. We come in here, you expect the good versus evil to play out, and it doesn't do that at all. In right. fact, it's the total opposite. So at least I can say, yes, we do have evidence that we were victorious, because throughout the whole time, nothing happened. And the evidence was making that house quiet for 42 hours. That is where the evidence is in. So at least a skeptic or somebody who might not buy fully what we're saying or fully believe on board with us 100%, they have to leave questioning and saying in the back of their mind, okay, regardless whether I believe they are who they say they are, and regardless of knowing of all the stuff that happens in the Sally house, the one thing I cannot debunk in my mind is, how did they silence those entities in that house for 42 hours?
That's
the amazing thing. And you know what the only thing that somebody could come up with in their defense? They could say, well, they probably left because they didn't want to deal with them. They let them do their thing.
But that still points back to who we are. That still points back to the authority, and that's what I was going to say. Because right. we have interviews with people that have talked about being in the house, being scratched, being pushed, being fearful. We have the story from the one lady that used to run the tours about the college professor that used to bring his students in there to do tours, and the one student became possessed and had to go through an exorcism, and he would never come back. We have all these stories, horror stories, about this house. And for 42 hours, we shut it down. even to the point that the only activity we have is outside the house looking in. So no matter what anybody says, the fact comes down to this. SRT walks in the power and the name of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Jesus of Nazareth, the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach. We do what we do in his name, by his authority, under his orders. We not only shut it down, we shut it up, and we made it leave. We made it flee to the point that last night we slept. Everybody was sound asleep. I posted a picture of it from the first night, and the second night was even more. We spent four, almost 5 hours sound asleep. Give me a break, folks. This documentary, The Deep Darkness, shifted in its focus, but it proves that if you have the creative power of Almighty God inside of you based upon being born again, if the light of the world is inside of you, you can go into the deep darkness and do this. That's why I believe that this can be the first of many stories of showing everybody's tried their way. Now let us show you the way it should be done. That's the story. The story is that we went around town, we prayed for people, We were the bearers of the light in situations that they're not used to. And it was beyond what I expected, what anybody expected. But I know that it's exactly what the Lord wanted.
Exactly. It became a thing that whatever we were expecting and wanted to do, the Lord took over and did it the way it needed to be done. And what came out of that was, sure, evidence that we needed, and we did get enough evidence to put together our story and show the power of the Lord even more. Absolutely. I don't question that at all. But we also got to get our eyes off of the focus of just the Sally House and concentrate on the people that we were interviewing and how certain people were emotionally and how they felt the need to embrace prayer and embrace the Lord. And that's something I didn't expect to find, you know, with certain people that we interviewed, only for the mere fact is you don't know what one's faith is, especially in a town like that. Everybody has their different opinions, but it all seemed to be centered on a town longing and reaching out for help and embraced everything that we said. And that's the part that was amazing to me.
I mean, we did, I'm running out of time here, we did debunk certain things. We did explain certain things. We did get the answers we wanted about the town. What it really comes down to is this. What we discovered was, like Joe just said, this is a town in need of healing. Healing because of its bloodletting history. Healing because of the racial issues that go back to slavery. Healing because of the hidden sin. Healing because of the promotion of the paranormal over other things. And feeding the monster that has now been proven to be toothless. Maybe what will come out of this is people that have stayed silent, rising up and saying, it's time to take back our town. It's time to change its identity. And it's time to let the light in and drive the darkness out. Good show, brother. Glad you can make it. And we appreciate your support, folks. We still need it. We still need your support to get this done. Go to thedeepdarkness.com. I'm Richard Grun on behalf of Joe Citrone, SRT, the Supernatural Response Team. It's dark out there, and we are shining the light. We'll see you next time here on Reflections in the Dark.